Welcome to Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone in the Libertarian Institute. Danny Duchamp, returning guest and champion of the show. Danny, thank you for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
How did you first hear about Richard T. Ely?
I don't recall if it was Moldbug specifically, but it was one of those neo-reactionaries using him as evidence that America is a communist country, and they make their case by just showing Ely and people like him and the effect that they had on American politics. Yeah, and my first introduction to him wasn't a flattering one.
Looking at his Wikipedia page, he lived from 1854 to 1943, was an American economist, allegedly, using that term loosely, author and leader of the progressive movement who called for more government intervention to reform what they perceived as the injustices of capitalism, especially regarding factory conditions, compulsory education, child labor, and labor unions. He is best remembered as a founder and the first secretary of the American Economic Association, as a founder and secretary of the Christian Social Union, Thou Shall Not Steal, and as the author of a series of widely read books on the organized labor movement, socialism, and other social issues. So, before we get into Equality of Opportunity, the section of his autobiography published in, I believe it's 1938, the section's titled My Belief in Equality of Opportunity. Before getting into that, why do you oppose equality of outcome?
So, yeah, equality of outcome is the normal thing to bash for modern conservatives when they are talking about leftist attempts to institute some measure in the name of equality. They'll say equality of opportunity is what we want, not equality of outcome. And to be fair, they have some good points, right, that I do agree with. Equality of outcome it does seem difficult just intuitively for anyone to support that. If you have two people who are both made worse off, right, they could become more equal. How could a moral ideal that could result in everyone being worse off be a decent moral ideal?
That's excellent. I think it was me watching a speech of Barack Obama while he was president. And I'm sitting there wondering, he's talking all about equality. And I go, this is like the least equal thing I can imagine. He has executive powers. He has like a 90% civilian hit rate in his drone program. And he's really worried about some people in the voluntary sector making more than others. Is there anything more unequal than the citizen to the state? Like the police officer says, you have to obey my arbitrary commands or I get to kill you, more or less. And we get to cage you. I go, that is the most unequal thing, as bad as, you know, my boss and my parents and some jerk friends. Nothing is more unequal than that. So it's so perfect that they will promote this thing that could never be achieved. Because the more legislation you have, the more unequal it is. And they're constantly pushing for more legislation. So, of course, one of my favorite memes ever is communism leads to equality. And there's this giant statue of Chairman Mao. How many Chinese people have a statue in China as big as that one of Chairman Mao? Very
right.
Anything else on equality of outcome before we get into Ely's My Belief in Equality of Opportunity?
Yeah. So obviously Ely's shtick here is going to be talking about, he'll talk about equality with an implication that what he's in favor of is some side being raised up, right? If you're actually in favor of equality at all, like of opportunity, outcome, any kind of equality, then there must be some situation in which you would be willing to accept a lower overall standard of living for people in order to make it more equal. If not, then your standard seems to actually be that you're in favor of higher living standards in general, not that you're in favor of more equal living standards.
Excellent. Please read the first paragraph and we will analyze it.
With pleasure. Okay, so my belief in equality of opportunity. My belief in the importance of equality of opportunity has never wavered or changed. The struggle for equality of opportunity is what made America great from the point of view of social philosophy. This struggle runs through our entire complex history like a red thread, giving it unity and explaining what is American as nothing else does. In the 18th century, it was based on the philosophy of natural equality. Later, this philosophy was modified by the recognition of the existence of natural inequalities. Today, we know that there are vast natural inequalities of native ability among men. Upon this knowledge is based the attitude which characterizes America at its best, the attitude expressed by the words, give him a chance.
It's give him a chance, not give all an equal chance. Because when you're thinking of him, you're thinking one person, I'd like to give a person a chance. But today you'd be talking about 330 million people. But if it's a principle, it has to apply to all 7 billion. So I'm guessing the UN would be behind this equality program. And he says the struggle runs through our entire complex history. So he's giving progressives a narrative to build on. So it's saying, not only do you have this belief, but your ancestors had this strong belief, and now it's resulted in you. So you need to carry the baton forward. So manipulative. And it just goes to show how important historical narratives are when it comes to convincing people of something, that if they already think they're a part of it, well, they'll continue to promote it. Any thoughts on the first paragraph?
I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. I think that a lot of early, I shouldn't say early, but this era of socialists in America, what they tended to do was they wrapped socialism in the red, white, and blue, right? They would tend to try to find some way that they can relate their relatively foreign ideas to, you know, liberal principles, what America was based on, and try to work them in so that any push towards socialism, well, that's just us carrying on the proud tradition of our forefathers, right? And I think that if you really talked to him, or if there was someone who he thought was an ally talking to him, I don't for a second believe that Eli would say that that America was founded on sort of socialist principles. I think it's quite cynical that he's trying to weave that narrative in there. I think it's intentionally trying to mislead.
Chapter goes on. He says, some years ago, Mr. von Bethmann Hollweg, son of the old chancellor, who was famous for his remark that the treaty with Belgium was merely a scrap of paper, visited me in my office in Chicago. We talked about many things. And at last I said to him, you have been in this country 3 months. You have traveled extensively. You are a keen observer. Your impressions are vivid. Tell me what it is that characterizes America above all other countries. He replied quickly that what characterized America above all other countries could be summed up in the phrase, give him a chance. He did not speak about the speed of our life, our acceleration. He did not refer to America as a land of unlimited possibilities. The four little words, give him a chance, expressed his outstanding impression. So let's try and take their own move and use it against him. I believe in the concept of give him a chance. Why should I advocate the principles of anarcho-capitalism if I believe such a thing?
Yeah. So giving someone a chance in the lingo that he's using here seems to essentially mean provide him with material resources at the expense of someone who does not consent. We have a word for that. It's called stealing. There's general reasons that giving someone a chance or giving someone anything without the consent of the person who previously owned it, there's a general reason why that will tend to result in worse social outcomes. So I get the value of the thing that I stole from you. You lose that value. However, there's also the fact that now you're less incentivized to work because you know the stuff could be stolen from you at any moment. Why build up your capital goods and your resources to try to make a better life yourself if good all be taken away? So it reduces the incentive to produce. It means that you're going to try to spend money on security, restricting the amount that could be stolen from you. So that amount is lost. So when something's stolen, it's not a straight transfer from one person to another. It's a transfer with a significant loss in the process. So just from a utilitarian standpoint, you would want the resources to be taken, to be given freely, right, between people. Under anarcho-capitalism, libertarianism, voluntarism, whatever you want to call it, you would want to give people chances. But the reason you'd want to give them a chance is because that person who you're giving a chance to, you believe, is going to do something good with that chance, right? You're going to invest in his project, or you're going to give him a job or something like that, because you think that there's something of merit to what he's doing or to what he can do, right? And that kind of giving him a chance, the giving him a chance where it's rather than, you know, taking involuntarily from one person and giving to another, but instead voluntarily giving to someone on the basis that he will be able to produce, that's something that tends to raise the standard of living for everyone rather than leave us in a race to the bottom.
Yeah, the word give is extremely manipulative, because people will sometimes say, it's important we give these people X, whatever X is in the topic, social services, access to education, access to healthcare. I like giving people things. As a matter of fact, you can purchase the Voluntarist Handbook on Amazon or get it for free on odyssey.com.
Essays in there, I hear. Brilliant people all.
Danny wrote an excellent article, The Utilitarian Case for Voluntarism. It's in there along with some other great heavy hitters. But when you say give, it assumes that one person's kindly giving. What they really mean is, I'm going to put obligations on total strangers to do something and to bear a very large cost when it comes to government, to the tune of, what does the state get, like $4 or $5 trillion every year? So it's not like you're asking them to help you lift the groceries. It's like you're asking them to work a third of their time for someone else. And it always seems like they're talking about people they already like. Like if they say, well, I really want to give people a chance. By the way, half the country is a bunch of racist bigots, homophobes who want women to be tied to the handmaid's tale. You want yourself to be forced to fund those people? That is extremely ridiculous. I mean, they spend all their time vilifying them and they want to help them out coercively. Also, the word chance is a bit of a lie, because if I give someone a chance and let's say they screw it up, I've screwed up jobs in the past, and it assumes I can stop giving them a chance. That means at some point in the future, it can stop. You know what? We're going to fire you. Actually, you're not allowed to fire someone unless you meet the following OSHA criteria. And so therein lies the ridiculousness. Two of the four words are completely manipulative. They couldn't even give us four words. That's why I didn't read this whole book, but you told me that I probably should. Anything else on give him a chance?
No, I think we've done that to death. Plus, we're about to get into the crux of it, which is where he moves on from give him a chance and tries to relate that to his equality of opportunity attitude.
Very nice. Let us hear it.
Okay. So on its positive side, this struggle for equality of opportunity expresses itself in a multitude of ways which aim at giving every individual a chance to develop all his powers, whatever they may be, to the fullest extent. We want every American to have an effective right to be provided with material goods for physical growth, to maintain his health and strength in a favorable environment. Our public school system cannot be explained otherwise. Even now, in publicly supported colleges and universities, the struggle is going on to give those who are qualified to benefit by it the opportunity for research and scientific investigation. Every step forward in the history of public education has met with obstacles, and those which have not been overcome are gradually yielding to the irresistible pressure for equality of opportunity. However, there still lingers on in our public school system the idea that all men are born essentially equal, that they should all have the same kind of training. This is fallacious and socially injurious. Generally speaking, an academic high school education is desirable, but there are many who cannot profit by it. It has been said that there is no greater inequality than equal treatment of unequals. George Washington did not believe in equality of powers. He thought that each should have an equal chance to develop what powers he had so that our government might function as the makers of the Constitution intended it should. In his farewell address, he said, "Promote, then, as an object of primary importance in institutions for the general diffusion of knowledge, in proportion as the structure of a government gives force to public opinion, it is essential that public opinion should be enlightened. The makers of our Constitution expressed their belief in equality of opportunity when they safeguarded to all alike the fundamental rights which are stated in the first 10 amendments. No agency of the government may abrogate these rights.
Goodness. So again, we have him invoking the founders, telling people this is already part of their tradition, and specifically George Washington. So if you want to be like someone like George Washington, advocate equality of opportunity. Notice, yeah. Give him a chance, opportunity, is not necessarily meaning that all chances should be equal, because it's so undefinable and so unachievable. Even at the time, whether you're in Arizona or New York, or what if your neighbors who are raised by different parents, this equality of opportunity is completely, the concept of equality has nothing to do with whether or not people have opportunities. The fact that you would want to make those equal, I'm not sure that it's even desirable at that point. What were your takeaways from that paragraph?
Yeah, so the first thing is what you had on, that again, he's trying to weave that into the American narrative, right? He's not trying to be honest about it and say, okay, I have these different ideas. I think we should take a left turn here. He's trying to weave it into the general thrust of American history. If that was in fact what the founders intended, then why now do you have to set up these programs and institutions? If this is what they meant, then why did they not set them up? I think that tells you that is not at all what their intentions were. Nevertheless, his whole thing about equality of opportunity, when he's talking about giving people a chance, right? He's talking about having a public school system so that everyone gets some kind of education. It should be noted that there's a mismatch between the policy prescription, even if it works, and the ideal, like the words that he's using, right? So if everyone goes to a public school, a government school, that isn't necessarily going to give everyone the same opportunities, right? Because people still have different families, right? They'll be in different areas, which are in poor areas, which will have different quality schools. There's going to be, as he mentions, different inherent characteristics that they'll be able to take advantage of or not. You're not actually going to get to equality with the measures that he's advocating. So I think that's kind of a foot in the door thing. I will propose it. Let me draw an analogy to the current gun control movement. Right, so the current gun control movement, they'll say, look at all these shootings in America. We need to ban AR-15s. AR-15s are not what used to shoot most people in America. That's not what most shootings are caused by. They know this. The point is that they will propose some method of solving the problem that won't actually resolve the problem, but will start taking away your rights, so that in a few years, when it has failed, they can advocate to take away more of your rights. And I think the same is true here. Like, the equality of opportunity is an absurd goal, right? There is no way that everyone is going to have the same opportunities. I did an article a while back called Against Equality, and one of the things that you can find in the scientific literature is that reading to your child, whether or not you read bedtime stories to your child, actually has a larger effect on their outcomes than sending them to a private school, which is pretty significant. Like, so read to your kids, by the way, guys, that's an additional thing here. But that's something that is going to create a large inequality of opportunity. Right? Kids who didn't get read to as a child, they don't have that opportunity. Are we really going to say that you can't read to your kids because that gives them an unfair opportunity, right? Or the point is that there's always going to be something, right? You're never going to get rid of all of it. And so it justifies an ever larger and larger state to solve this unsolvable problem. And at the end of the day, the things he's relying on in order to justify his equality of opportunity aren't equality of opportunity, right? He's not actually proposing equality of opportunity here. What he's saying is give people a chance, right? Giving someone a chance doesn't mean that everyone has exactly the same chance, right? Someone who already has a chance, it's still good to give him another chance, right? If there's something you think he can do well, even if he's screwed up before, give him another chance, right? even if another person doesn't have one, more and better chances for people, that's a good thing. More equal chances for people, it's morally irrelevant.
Yeah, and certainly if you want more opportunities, you'd want to make sure there's not one group of people coercively intervening in voluntary exchanges. It's like, whoa, hey, give this man a chance. I know he doesn't have your license. I know he doesn't have your certification. And frankly, we don't respect that anyways. Give this man a chance, for Christ's sake. Stop halting his progressive future to make a better life for him and his family. So you can just use this same argument. Even if you advocate it, it doesn't justify the state at all, as David Friedman does an excellent job pointing out. So much of the greatest inequalities are the result of things provided by governments. He uses the case of education. Is everyone equally educated? I mean, surely. We got 12 years that people spend in their younger, in the younger portion of their life, under state schooling. Certainly everyone should, basically everyone knows the same amount of stuff. No, not true. Watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Even the smartest people, there's a wide range of intellectual diversity there. He also uses the court system. So someone who has no money and gets a public defender versus, I don't know, O.J. Simpson or Jeffrey Epstein in 2005, not in his recent non-suicide, but I mean, he gets Alan Dershowitz to give him like this total sweetheart deal, like that you would get if you like probably stole a Snickers bar or something. So there is no equality when it comes to government. So his entire thesis is rendered, I think, ridiculous. Let's go on to this next one. On the negative side, this struggle for equality of opportunity expresses itself in the determination to render adequate service for material goods that we receive. We are determined that men in our country shall no longer receive something for nothing, because if they do so, they abstract from the wealth produced that which should go for service. Sorry, that was hard for me to read. Through stock exchange manipulation, through dishonest manipulation of real estate, through unfair practices in merchandising, millions are given to those who have taken something from nothing. We are trying to reduce this amount to a minimum. Property, which is inherited by passing from generation to generation, includes vast amount of surplus value. In 1891, I made the following plea for reform of the laws of inheritance. Quote, excessive wealth discourages exertion, but a suitable reform of the laws of inheritance will remove us many idle persons who consume annually immense quantities of wealth, but contribute nothing to support to the support of the race, and who, leading idle lives, cultivate bad ideas and disseminate social poison. For the sake of the sons of the rich, as well for the sons of the poor, we need a reform of the laws of inheritance. A reform of the laws of property will help us to approach that ideal condition in which the man who does not work shall not eat, and it will also tend to the equalization of opportunities, so as to give all a fairer start in life, allowing each one to make use of such opportunities as his capacity and diligence permit, and thus rendering inequalities, economic and social, less arduous and injurious, more stipulating and helpful. Lord have mercy, what a pile of nothing. What are your first thoughts?
I don't know where to start.
Reform.
Okay, so the wealth transfer, the inheritance reform that he's advocating here is probably the place to start. I think for the first part, it's based on kind of a myth that most wealth in Western societies is based on inheritance, right? That, oh, the rich just tend to inherit all their wealth. There are a couple of ways of showing that this is ridiculous. Like Thomas Sowell often points out that I think it's 1 in 5 Americans will be in the top 20% at some point in their lives. 4 out of 5 will be in the top 20% at some point in their lives. I think that the clearest way to point this out is to point out, look at the way that wealth increases, especially during the time when he's writing, right? You've just gone through the one of the longest periods, biggest periods of wealth creation in the history of humanity. And we are talking about inheritance, right? If all of that wealth is created, it clearly was not inherited, right? If all of that wealth has come new into the world, someone went out, did some work, and produced it, right? Now, he talks about a bunch of professions, a bunch of different things you can do, and tries to basically throw mud on them. There's something about stock exchange, investing in the stock exchange, and investing in property and things like that. And he just writes that off as though those people are doing just nothing productive. It's just ridiculous. Nothing. All of those things are entirely useful, right? So investing, I think, hopefully most people know why investing is useful, but basically the reason is time preference, right? I've worked and saved up a lot of money. You have a great business idea. You could wait and save up a whole lot of money to put that into practice, but then would lose out on the world would lose out on that wealth that you could have created if you just started the business now. I lend you the money, and therefore you can go out and do that business. That's the same if it's during the progress of a company. It's a similar sort of thing for real estate investment, all of these sorts of things. The things where he's talking about someone getting something for nothing, they just simply aren't the case. He's just writing off a whole bunch of productive tasks. There are situations in which there are market manipulation tactics that don't produce for people, right? Where it really is getting something for nothing. And that would be, for example, a politician getting involved in the market and using their position as a politician in order to control stock movements, right? That arguably would be the case, but that's, I don't think, what he's talking about. He's not talking about government officials. He's talking about business people, right? That's who he's trying to go after. Yeah, the whole thing he tears down so many different professions that are entirely useful. Oh, he also talks about so wealth transfer from a parent to a child, right? That's actually a particularly useful thing. If I am working, right, someone might say that, oh, well, if I can keep all of my own wealth while I'm alive, but then once I'm dead, then it'll go revert to the state, or some portion of it'll revert to the state. That can't possibly change my incentives, right? That can't possibly change my incentives and make me want to work less. But of course, what could be a larger incentive than leaving something to my children? I don't know if you realize, but people actually care about their children quite a lot. Yeah, confiscating someone's wealth after they die, it does not change the kind of deleterious social effects that it has when you confiscate wealth.
Yeah,
There
Thomas
was
Mann.
probably more in
Yeah.
there.
Yeah, well, that's the Gish Gallop, where they throw 50 false things at you that you just say, well, there's got to be something that's right about this. Thomas Sowell's book, Basic Economics, he talks about a study by the University of Michigan and the IRS, and he says, well, certainly, you can see the top 1% wealth increases. What you're not looking at are the different human beings that then occupy that 1%. The analogy that I like to use is there's a guy who gets a $50 million grant by the Paul Krugman Foundation, and he goes and he looks at a high school and says, all right, 25% of people are seniors, 25% are freshmen. Here's the top and the bottom. Guy comes back 20 years later, and wouldn't you know it, still 25% of seniors are 25% of students are seniors and 25% are freshmen. So these groups haven't moved. They're still seniors and they're still freshmen. Well, the obvious response is those are different human beings than the ones you studied 20 years ago. So what you could actually do is look at individual incomes and see if those increase over time. And of course, they do as a result of competition and capital investment. So, I mean, there's really nothing to this argument at all. And of course, bashing investments as if initial public offerings that give so many businesses the startup capital to employ people, to invest in research development, to write that off as useless. A guy advocating government schooling is worried that an institution might be useless. What
Yeah.
what's going on? He must have worked in the Wilson administration. Let's get on to read the next chapter for us. Sure. Many objected.
So, many objected to my proposal to reform inheritance tax laws. They said, "You are proposing measures which impair the rights of private property. This is not a valid objection. The right of inheritance is one right, and the right of private property is another and distinct right. The right of property means an exclusive right of control over a thing. The right of inheritance means the transfer of this right. The state or local political unit must be recognized as co-heir, entitled to share in all inheritances. A man is made what he is by family, town, or local political circle which surrounds him, and by the state in which he lives, and by the nation. A tax on inheritance is the means whereby the claims of the town, state, and nation may secure recognition. No wise man wants to abolish the inheritance of property, but a great deal is being done, and more is going to be done, to bring under control the passage of property from generation to generation, and thus to cut down very greatly the receipt of something for nothing." So, yes. There was something that I really wanted to hit on there. Okay.
Well, how about this? The state or local political unit must be recognized as co-heir, entitled to share in all inheritances.
So, okay. That's basically Barack Obama's "you didn't build that." Do you all remember that? Hopefully people do. But Barack Obama had the speech where he talks about, you know, how your business requires roads and stuff in order to function. You didn't build that. And therefore, you know, the state is entitled to some share of what you have, and so are all the other people in the country, and so really, you know, no man is an island, that kind of thing. The problem is that there are two ways that a business acquires things in order to function. One is on the open market, right? We purchase certain things and then transform those things. So you could also argue the third way, where you create them yourselves, but you'd still have to purchase the resources. So two ways: you purchase them on the open market. In that situation, you have paid. You have already paid for the things that you're using. So that you didn't build that, therefore you owe some of it. No, I paid what I owed. It is already done. The other way is the taxes, right? So you are going to use some service that the government provides, like roads, or maybe the workers you used public schools or things like that. The current taxes were supposed to pay for that, but apparently they're not enough. Apparently some dilapidated roads and shitty public schools is not enough to cover that the government gets the trillions of dollars that it currently does. Apparently insufficient. It needs more. No, it's ridiculous. Clearly, the amount of taxes that people pay have massively outstripped any of the things that are actually useful in their lives, right? The amount of money that it would actually cost just to run some schools and roads, right, if it was any other entity doing it, would be a fraction of a fraction of a percent of the current US government's budget. So, yeah, that whole thing about how if you create a business or you earn a living or you produce something that you really owe society in general, no, society has already, you've already paid society. You voluntarily purchased the things you used. You have more than paid enough taxes to cover the government provided parts of it. So that's just dishonest. And it's a dishonesty that's still going today with, or at least written not so long ago with Barack Obama.
Well, look at the bait and switch. They bring you in with something real. No one got where they are by the fruits of their own labor. Of course, you were raised by parents and you probably weren't that productive at this time until 14, 16, 18. A lot of 30-year-olds I know would fall under this condition. So he takes something that no one does it all by themselves. And of course, when you're born into a place, there are a number of things you benefit from. There's also a number of costs imposed on you. But he then takes this reality and says, therefore, this group, government, becomes the co-heir. Not Walmart, or I don't know who was big in the 1830s, A&P Grocers, or I don't know if Sears was going on back then, but it's the total non sequitur of this is a reality in which people live. You are able to reap benefits from the work of others. As you mentioned, we pay for things, and that's how we can compensate them. But it doesn't follow that therefore only this group. Now, maybe if he was a real believer in equality, anyone at any time can take anything from anyone else because, I mean, they didn't build it. They basically they drove on roads that other people paid for. So theft isn't really a thing. But by that metric, well, government doesn't have the right to own $4 trillion every year. Anyone can just go into the Capitol, take whatever they want. They can go into the Pentagon because they didn't build that. I mean, they only got that because other people did stuff. So we can go into the Pentagon and take all belongings that the Department of Defense has. And then other people can take it from us. And all you have is this circle of theft, unless you recognize self-ownership and voluntary exchanges. Anything on the need to question property titles and inheritance?
Well, yeah. So jumping back to the first part of the paragraph that I just read, where he says, they said you're proposing measures which impair the rights of private property, but he says it's not a valid objection because the right of private property is the right to control something, and the right of inheritance is the ability to transfer, the right to transfer that right. And those are distinct things. No, they're not. Like, one is a subset of the other, right? My right to transfer this property to someone else is part of my control of it. If I cannot transfer this property to another person, then to some degree, I do not control it. So it's I don't know. It's just an elementary logical mistake. He's just saying these two things are just different, and so it's not a valid objection. No, one is a subset of the other, and so it is. It makes me wonder kind of how much he can believe it himself, right? To what extent does he doesn't strike me as an idiot, right? It's an elementary logical mistake that, you know, if you handed that in to your philosophy professor, you'd get an F, right? This is just, you know, one is a subset of the other. No, go try again, right? That shouldn't be something, a mistake that he would make. That makes me think that he's not actually making these arguments in good faith. He's just trying to find excuses, right, that he thinks the reader will buy for increasing state power, which is what ultimately he wants to do. That's his job. He sells justifications for state power.
Final paragraph says, in these ways, we are trying to carry out the philosophy of equality of opportunity expressed in our Constitution. We must not run all the people through the small mill, educational or otherwise. We must give each one an opportunity for educational, spiritual, and religious training in accordance with the character and makeup of the individual. We provide opportunities and give each his chance. That is America. It's too boring for me to say it a third time, but I will. Again, he's trying to build on the historical narrative. This is why understanding history as well as philosophy is so vitally important. Anything on that last paragraph or the section in general?
Yeah. So running all the people through the same mill. We must not run all the people through the same mill. I thought he was in favor of equality. That literally is what would be required. You're going to have to put everyone in the same position. Ultimately, I think that this just falls to all of the same problems that any equality argument falls to. When someone's trying to sell equality to you, whether it's opportunity, outcome, or whatever it is, what they will do is they will paint a picture in which one person has less of something than the other person. And then they will say, well, wouldn't it be better if they both had a lot? Notice that in such a situation, what they're doing is they are imagining one person rising up to meet the other person. The reason that that seems good, the reason that intuitively you go, yeah, that seems like a great thing, I guess I do favor equality, the reason it seemed good was just because the overall benefit to everyone was increasing, right? One guy was becoming better off and the other guy wasn't getting worse off. Like, the concept of equality should be distinguished from what's the concept of improvement. The only way you can say that actually, no, I do favor equality rather than just improvement in general, is to say that there might be some situation where I'd even want someone to get worse off so that they can all be the same, or even that both people can get worse off, but they're all the same. And the telling thing is that that is kind of what all that he's advocating for is going to result in. Right? So giving government control over education, stopping people from passing their wealth on to their children, which thereby reduces their incentive to produce in the first place. All of this sort of thing is going to reduce the overall production of humanity. It just reduces our ability to produce better schools through entrepreneurship. It reduces our ability or our incentive to produce things for our children. All of that is just going to be a slow degradation of humanity. And even if that resulted in more equality, which, as you've pointed out from solid gold Mao statues, it does not. But even if it did result in more equality, who cares? I want things to be better, not more equal.
Excellent points. Yeah, there's a great article called Is Equality a Worthy Goal by Bradley Thomas. It's in the book, free PDF at odyssey.com. Anyone with the faintest acquaintance with reality, however, realizes that the human species, mankind, is uniquely characterized by a high variety, diversity, differentiation, in short, inequality. Included in these human inequalities and differences are traits like intelligence, ambition, work ethic, skill sets, ability, etc. So this is the ultimate fool's errand to think that we can make people equal in opportunity or in equality of outcome. Danny Duchamp, where is the best place to find your work?
Just DannyDuchamp.com, DannyDuchamp.com. It's a pretty basic website, but it has links to all of the places you can find me, my Substack, my YouTube, my Odyssey, my Float, Twitter, all that kind of good stuff.
Thanks to everyone for watching. Keith Knight, don't tread on any Libertarian Institute. Danny Duchamp, thank you for your time.